of Friction Protocol. Udop, how's it going?
Hey, Greg. Doing well, man. How are you? Excited to be on here.
Awesome. Yeah, we're super excited to have you. Well, so I'd first like to just give a quick brief overview of Friction, and then we'll jump into sort of like your history and your career as a trader, and then we'll circle back to Friction and all the details. So for those who don't know, what is the Friction protocol?
Yeah, so Friction is a full stack portfolio management protocol built on Solana. Essentially, this means we have individual products known as vaults. Vaults are quantitatively designed return generation strategies, and each vault sits on a place on what we consider kind of the DeFi efficient frontier, which is essentially a risk reward spectrum of strategies. The key focus of Friction has been to find forms of return that are diversified, uncorrelated to traditional assets, and not just Delta One products or just long short spot, not super reliant on emissions from traditional world of kind of when DeFi summer kicked off. We had AMMs and liquidity mining across a bunch of protocols to incentivize users. So our focus is to build strategies that sit on the spectrum of risk reward and offer that to users through vaults, as well as institutions, DAOs, and traditional asset managers through circuits.
Awesome. Very exciting. So the latest buzzword of the day in the crypto DeFi ecosystem is called DOVs, DeFi option vaults. Friction is one of the top players in the DOV space. But Udop, before we jump into the details of Friction, I'd love to understand more about your background. You know, I know you have a trading background as well. You traded in the energy space. So maybe we could start back to, you know, what you studied in college and how you found yourself in the trading world and how you moved on to the crypto world.
Yeah, good question. So I got into crypto probably around 2017, 2018 in college as a sophomore, just working through, we joined a quantitative finance group, which is also I met Alex, my co-founder, and we started working on a bunch of problems that were mostly not related to crypto, everything from StatArb to vol mispricing, relative value trades, and mostly this kind of group of people who went into market making, HFT, or something in the space. By background, actually, I studied petroleum engineering, which is quite a bit from crypto. But that was what really got me excited about the energy markets. I think I was most interested in the kind of intersection of how do commodities actually have a role in kind of the traditional supply and demand of end users. So given the market is very physical oriented and driven, I wanted to join a desk that was focused on managing that exposure kind of in real world assets, as well as the futures swaps and then derivative space that I was also working kind of within. The part that got me really excited was kind of as DeFi summer was kicking off in 2020, I was that was also when kind of flat price had bottomed out at like negative 37 bucks on TI. And at that point, I was kind of moving out of the TradFi role in mode of the at that point, I was on a gasoline desk. So we were doing a lot of like US to Europe, US to LATAM, just general US gasoline arbs. And then realized I the opportunity to work in DeFi and build something to essentially allow people to have portfolio management or risk management broadly was just unattended. So I was really excited to get Friction kicked off in October of last year during a hackathon. And then, yeah, it's been a fun ride from there.
Awesome. Okay. So that's very interesting. So kind of going back a little bit. So you met your co-founder, Alex, in college. You guys were part of the investment committee or team?
Yeah, quant finance team.
Quant finance team. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Back test and tried new strategies.
Oh, that's fascinating. And what school did you guys go to?
Oh, we went to University of Texas at Austin.
Oh, fantastic. So yeah. You guys are trading these strategy or doing research in these strategies, and then you find yourself on the energy desk because you have a petroleum background. Now, you mentioned there's some trades between Europe and Latin America and the U.S. What do those look like? I'm not familiar with those types of trades. And maybe you can just kind of give us a brief background of what that means.
Yeah, so BP was a super physically oriented trading firm. As most people don't kind of, they see like the BP retail gas station brand. And behind that is a lot of really exciting pieces. So there's a large producer business, so producing like unrefined crude oil. There's a large refining business to refine that crude oil into end user products that you can access there. But in between is this group that was like a supply and trading team. Essentially, the team's job is to take the natural longs and shorts from both the unrefined and refined product side and turn that into directional or hedge trading positions. So a lot of it was balancing consumer and producer demand, but also taking views on kind of where we think market goes. I think the biggest instruments traded were spread. So the example is basically we traded three arbitrages, like location, time, and quality. So time spreads are something we're familiar with in calendars. We see both in the vol space and in the future space. Quality is product differentials. So there's different grades of products that you can trade in the crude space or in the refined product space. And then there's location. So as I was talking about, you can arb physical barrels between the Gulf Coast in the U.S. and between consuming centers, so Northwest Europe, South America, and essentially you can run these between all sorts of products. So we're actually physically moving these cargoes between these regions, and then also managing these giant supply and demand balances across the world to forecast where we think fundamentally market moves. And this is a lot of the reason why I think we were doing okay in trading, doing quite well around trading in kind of December 19, February 2020, when kind of flat price was moving. But there's a lot of like forward indicators about Chinese demand cratering as we saw COVID starting in the region. So it's a really interesting position to be in because you see true like supply and demand on the grassroots level. So,
wow, that's fascinating. So kind of thinking through this a little bit more. So most of us are used to kind of screen markets. Now, when you're doing trades or setting up like deliveries between locations, is this really just like getting on the phone, calling, you know, some demand end user buyer in Latin America saying, hey, I can get this thing delivered to you at this purchase price. And then you find back on the other side, okay, you know, I can go out of this port here in the US and deliver that. That's pretty much, is that right?
Yeah, so that's one leg of the business on the more operational side. And then there's an equivalent component on like, how do you decide? Well, do you want to like wear the exposure that the cargo has? Because you own a cargo and the cargo is moving the water, you're going to be long that cargo. You can hedge that cargo against the screen and then only trade the basis, which is like the OG form of basis. We talk about so many forms of basis in crypto now, but that's physically the differential between, let's say, a barrel of crude oil in MEH, so in Houston, versus WTI in Cushing, Oklahoma. So there's a lot of really interesting kind of arbs that pop up there. But one part of it is the physical leg, one part of it is the futures leg. And then you can take directional risk on both. We had an entire set of operational folks. I mean, the desk in the floor in Chicago is about 540 seats. There's about like 30 or 40 traders. And then everyone else's job is to basically optimize the machine as much as you could and turn it into a really profitable business, not just on the physical delivery and trading side, but also on the optimization and taking speculative view. I mean, BP is a pretty large trader. They definitely were doing significant amounts of OI on both the screens and in the physical markets. And one nuance about the physical markets is like, it's not as simple as you kind of pick up the phone and find a counterparty. We actually use this really interesting auction style designed by Platts. A familiar name to a lot of people in kind of the equity space maybe. But Platts essentially creates these concentrated liquidity windows where traders of physical cargoes, so like the VTOL, the Trafigura, Glencore's of the world and BP's of the world come together and are able to participate in a open auction that lasts for 30 minutes. Usually happens once a week for each set of the products, given how niche they are. And this kind of concentrated liquidity window is a lot of the inspiration behind the RFQ protocol we built within Friction to allow for these auctions to happen for market makers and make the experience kind of as seamless as we could.
That's fantastic. I definitely want to explore a little bit more of that coming forward. I want to know about the RFQ system. So real quick before we move on away from petroleum, because you were there when petroleum went negative. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, that was a crazy April 19th. I think it was my friend's birthday in 2020 when we were all just on the floor just watching flat price go super negative. Although like the notional volume traded at that price was not insane, but it was still a crazy event for the market and a lot of traders.
Wow, that's super interesting. Because even as like I'm not an energy person, but even from just a vol perspective, like that's when all your models break. You know, that Black-Scholes assumes, you know, lower bound is zero. Now you got this asset that just broke the zero bound and all your vols are off and the model can't even work anymore. So being on the desk at that time, like, did you see anything crazy? Did someone lose a ton of money? Did someone gain a ton of money? Were the phones ringing off the hook, trying to figure out counterparties positions and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I think as a physical player, we obviously at that time, BP owned a lot of tankage in all the regions. I think they still have a very strong tankage footprint, which allows them to monetize the contango quite well. Basically, this means if spot is trading at a discount to futures, which it was not just trading a discount to futures, I was trading a discount to zero. So you could theoretically, if you have the ability to fill your tanks, which the the instance of flat price being negative or spot being negative was showing that there was really no more tanks to be filled. And for people who were able to fill tanks, it was a highly profitable trade. So you can lock in that $60, $80 of contango by filling up your tank spot and then shorting the future. And same way we now trade basis in the perps in the crypto futures market. That was a fantastic trade. I think a lot of the more sophisticated players, I mean, we had seen natural gas do some similar negative things in a couple of years ago. So from the vol side, I think we were more or less prepared to handle things like that. There's obviously a lot of desks that were on the more physical side that were struggling, hence the move negative. But I don't think there's more than like 120K lots traded that day, if I recall correctly.
Interesting. Well, that's fascinating. Cool. So basically, you're basically trading on an oil desk at peak craziness. Now you find yourself in the crypto space. So what kind of created the inspiration to reach out to Alex or however it happened and start your guys' own protocol in the crypto space?
Yeah. So if you like zoom out a little bit, I think a lot of the features of crypto are very similar to traditional markets when it comes to what type of asset or asset class we'd be thinking about. So you can apply a couple of mental models. You can say crypto is a commodity, it's a currency, or it may be a bond or it's some type of fixed income instrument in the future, depending on how you like view Ethereum. And I think that aspect made it very enticing for me because we spent 2 years basically studying supply and demand, which means like the physical amount of molecules that are moving between regions in the world and using that to create a view on where we think price goes, whether it's expressing it through spreads, cracks, which are basically refined products versus unrefined products, which incentivize refiners to run more crude, and then also all the arbs we were talking about earlier. So I think a lot of the true kind of market elements existed. The maturity wasn't there, I think. I mean, obviously, it hasn't been. It continues to get more mature every day as we see more people enter the centralized market and not as much the decentralized exchange market, given liquidity tends to dry up when there's large periods of deleveraging or just massive downward moves, as we've seen kind of in the last couple of weeks, over the last couple of months. So I think the exciting part was, okay, let's like remember this framework of risk management that we've kind of learned in the traditional trading space and being participating in DeFi summer. I mean, everyone's farming whatever stable coins, unstable coins, trying new DeFi protocols out every day. I think that excitement was definitely a big part of the trigger in the beginning for me. And then the opportunity of creating tools that people can use to manage their risk a little bit better than they currently were was probably the most exciting part. And in the beginning, our view on that was like we make structured products that allow anyone to take on some of the same exposure that a crude producer wants to override a 6 month strip of call options because they have a very strong forecast or very accurate forecast as to how many barrels they'll be producing. Same way a Bitcoin miner has a hash rate model and they can use that to determine how much BTC they're going to produce and then go to a traditional OTC desk or something to be able to sell those calls to exit their position instead of just TWAPing out a spot. So for me, there's a lot of similarities. And then the missing piece of risk management was what got us really excited. And actually, all this started with like me and Alex trying to look around at like some OTC desks to hedge impermanent loss for concept product AMMs. But essentially this feature of like adverse selection opportunity cost where you provide liquidity of two tokens into a pool and now you're more or less exposed to the correlation between the two tokens and the implied volatility of the pair. So we got really excited doing that OTC, realized it's a very curtained or veiled business. And the idea was Friction will open that up for anyone who wants to access the best pricing through a variety of counterparties on chain.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you guys run, I think, the hottest DOV on Solana. So basically, this allows, for those who are new to the space, this allows kind of a retail DeFi trader to park their, call it their Ether or Solana, into a vault. And then the vault will allow you to sell covered calls. Or you can also do the cash secure puts where you park your stable coin. And now you've recently just launched something called the crab strategy, which I believe is kind of the short straddle payoff. Now that we have this kind of framework, how are you guys matching the buyers of that vol or the sort of the players who are buying the vol from the doves? So you mentioned something about an RFQ system. Can you kind of dig into sort of all the processes around that?
For sure. So as I was alluding to earlier, the Platts auction in the commodities world, the NYSE closing, NASDAQ closing, all of these auctions are designed with a very specific kind of goal in mind, Our team has done things from treasuries through commodities through systematic equities. So we our view is like, let's find the best elements of these auctions and bring them into something that's done completely on chain. So currently, a lot of the problem that DeFi had was large option trades are getting executed through Telegram chats. We just didn't believe that that was scalable or useful. So we just don't like that model. The idea was we'll create a RFQ platform. It's called Channel RFQ, which connects any amount of makers through a very simple UI and soon to be kind of SDK. And makers are able to access essentially bidding for each one of these options that are being sold, or power perpetuals, or basis positions in some case with the newest Volt, through a pretty simple system. So it's a blind Dutch auction on the maker side, and anyone can come in and bid during a window. So we have windows for each auction. Let's say there's two options trading in this 8-minute window. Let's say it's two sold calls, since we have a risk tiers within the call options, for example. So we're trading like a sold 49 and a sold 51 call last week. Makers can come in during this window of 8 minutes, put in their bids. At the end of the window, kind of hit from the top of the book to clear the orders. And this makes it quite competitive from kind of how we've seen. We try to do a lot of analysis to see how we're trading versus like 90% of our products don't trade on centralized exchanges for options. But the ones that do, we can compare to see. I think we tend to trade in between kind of the bid offer for most products in the beginning, definitely without using any incentives. We were just creating this atmosphere of like, how can we get the most competitive auctions possible? That's a little bit of a look behind it. And then currently we're working on phasing into a permissionless bidding platform. So anyone can access both sides of the option, which opens up competition as well as increases kind of some of the operational logistics around how do we run these auctions effectively in a decentralized way. So really excited for that. And then also partnering with Paradigm, who's the largest liquidity network for options in the crypto space.
Well, that's fantastic. So your offering is going to extend and allow basically the regular retail DeFi trader to take the other side of the DUB as well.
Yeah. Wow. And combine their positions through what we call the APM, Automated Portfolio Manager. And they can basically build positions across Volts, taking either or side to get the exposure that they're looking for.
That's fantastic. And then I remember when I did a lot of research into you guys, one of the cool things was sort of this concept of circuits. And correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that, you know, if I'm a treasury or I have my own protocol and I have my own funds that I raised during some sort of a fundraising event, and now I have this treasury of coins, I can manage them on chain by a combination of all these different vaults or DeFi option vaults and create like a custom strategy. And that portfolio of vaults is called a circuit. Is that the right idea?
Right on.
Cool.
Yep. And those circuits are essentially, I mean, options are one asset that user can ask a DAO or a treasury institution asset manager can access to manage their treasury. But the real theme is like vol is just kind of one leg, although like every strategy may imply it'd be long or short vol. The first two are like call override, put override. The third one is a kind of delta neutral at the money straddle you were talking about. And then the fourth one is a basis strategy. The fifth one will be a long vol strategy, and the sixth one will be a fixed income one. So critical part of circuits is that it allows DAOs to diversify, because most DAOs, when they launch their native token or any DeFi protocol launches the native token, there's a lot of beta correlation to the L1 that they're on. It's almost impossible for that native token to outperform the L1 token, as you've kind of seen through bull and bear markets, and mostly bear markets in versus ETH. But creating a solution for them to diversify, knowing that they're mostly sitting in their native token and maybe like 95% native token, 5% stables or some other token, is very, very important for how we do risk assessment as part of the circuit.
And something else that I really like about sort of this approach is that, you know, DAOs are all about decentralized ownership. And now you can see how the funds of the DAO are being managed transparently on chain. So that it creates a lot of trust and, you know, no embezzlement or nonsense like that. That's fascinating.
It's really trustless. We like to think about like what we're trying to bring as like you don't need to trust a protocol or an individual. You have access to see everything that's happening, and you design your own risk framework based off of your needs as a counterparty.
Cool. That's fantastic. And then when did you guys go live on Mainnet?
So we launched on Mainnet on December 17th of last year. So it's been about 6 months since we launched.
And when did you guys officially like incorporate and begin as a company?
Yeah, around the same time, at the end of last year, we raised our seed round in January by Jump and Defiance. And since then, yeah, just been chugging along. We're three people back then, Now we're about eight people. Actually, four of us live together in Austin in this house, and then two people in Singapore, one person in Argentina, and one person in Eastern Europe.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. Well, if anyone wants to learn more about Friction, what's a good place for them to get started?
I think the best way is definitely app.friction.fi, Friction with a K. And there's a bunch of tools there to understand the products or Volts. And then there's a way to reach out to us on social, just Twitter at Friction_Labs. And then we're all always in the Discord. So if you're looking to join kind of DeFi communities, discord.gg/friction is where we're at most of the day.
Awesome. And then just kind of a quick couple of fun questions to wrap up here. How do you, trading is a full-time job, being a founder is a full-time job. How do you find sort of balance in your life? Is there anything you'd like to do outside of working for fun?
Yeah, I think the biggest relief out of working is probably just working out or exercising. We play a lot of spike ball as a team, just like a kind of backyard sport. But yeah, most of the days are on the computer or around the computer. So definitely gotten used to the lifestyle of being really close. I think in DeFi, it's not as often that we have to kind of stare at the screen as active traders. But as a protocol, definitely working on kind of constant improvements. So yeah, mostly just working out and reading a bunch when we can have the chance. More recently, I've been doing some writing. Probably start like not publishing that Anon soon. So looking forward to some of that.
Oh, fantastic. And then last question before we close up. For anyone who's new to trading, new to crypto, new to DeFi, is there any good books that you recommend for them that you found really helpful in your own career?
Oh, in terms of DeFi, I think there's a couple of... So I think the guys at CoinGecko released a book on like DeFi 101 or Basics of DeFi. That's definitely a solid kind of intro, although keep in mind like that stuff updates all the time given the emergence of new protocols and new assets. And then in terms of kind of broader option resources like Hull and Nainberg, always two classics, definitely worth a read. And then also, I mean, I think for people who are getting into DeFi derivatives, you should definitely be using GVol to see how markets are moving and how they look different. There's like a plethora of information on there for anyone looking to learn about trading, particularly the vol markets. And I don't think there's a place to get more easy insight into what's happening. So yeah, definitely appreciate you guys' tooling.
Ah, thanks so much. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. And remember, find edge, capture alpha, and slang size.